Oh, it started? Well, then let me start. Hey, I'm just here so I don't get fined.
Playoffs? What are you talking about? Playoffs? You kidding me? Playoffs?
I know it's been, 15 years since the Bills made the playoffs. Well, get ready, man. We're going.
Full start. Everyone but the center. Offense. 5-yard penalty.
I said, are you scoring? They said, I'm scoring. You scoring? I said, we scoring, man.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6!
Man, it seems like Rex Ryan has even derailed our intro song this week. But welcome to Falcon Zone. We are locked, stocked, and loaded, and so many things to get into today. Plus, we have two amazing guests, one of which we will get to here shortly. I see we already have him on the line. Reggie will join us here in a few short minutes. But joining me, as always, the most knowledgeable person on the show by far, he is Coach Haywood Hill. How you doing, Coach?
I'm doing great, Jeremy. How about yourself?
I'm doing pretty good. Not sure what's going on with our new intro music there, but it's always something, so we'll work through it, right?
Right.
But tons we do want to get into, but as I said, we have our first guest already on the line, and so I want to bring him on right now from 95.7 The Game Bay Area. He is Cody Elias. How you doing, Cody?
Jeremy, my friend, how are you?
Doing pretty good, pretty good. I guess a lot better than Derek Carr, and we could start there if you want.
Yeah, I was actually at that game. I had tickets to that game on Christmas Eve. Everything was going great for the Raiders. They're playing Indy. They're crushing Indy's hopes making the playoffs for Andrew Luck and Coach Pagano. And then on a play from Trent Cole, sacks Derek Carr. It looks awkward as he's wrapping him around. He twists him, and then there it is. You see Carr just lay there. And it just sucked the entire air out of the stadium, the city of Oakland. It was not a good thing. It's Christmas time. Christmas is the next day. Everyone's in a good mood, and then that happened, and it just took the life out of everything going on at that time.
Yeah, absolutely. I would definitely do that. And he seemed to know from the time he hit the ground, he said, hey, it's broke, and waved everybody else off. What does that do for Oakland's playoff hopes?
Well, a lot of people, you figure that's it. Oakland's done. They're going to Houston. Houston's should roll over them. But I don't think that's the case. The Raiders played Houston earlier this year. But yes, Derek was their quarterback when they went to Mexico City. It was a close game. The Raiders weren't able to run the ball in that game, which is going to be a huge emphasis this week with rookie Connor Cook starting. First rookie quarterback to start a playoff game for the Raiders since Todd Marinovich in 1991. And the Raiders are also looking for the first road playoff win since 1980. So the Raiders can still win this game because the Texans are still throwing out Brock Osweiler as their quarterback last time I checked. Has not had a great season. As you all saw, he was replaced by Tom Savage, proud of Pittsburgh, earlier in the year, and Savage goes down with an injury. They have to put Brock back in. A little disappointing that Savage, wasn't able to get through for them, so they had to go back to Brock. But I don't think the Raiders' playoff chances have hindered at all because they're playing Houston. But I wouldn't say they're prime to go on a Super Bowl run if they had if they still had Derek Carr.
I have a question for you, Cody. Quick question.
Yeah.
With that being
the
case, how is the morale of the team right now? Do they seem to now understand that it is the playoffs? And sometimes these type of injuries, although you don't want any player to be hurt, can tend to motivate a team as well. Where is their general consensus of their morale at this particular moment as they get ready for Houston?
So when the injury first happened, everyone was always saying the right things. You heard Donald Penn. Bruce Irvin, a lot of the Raider veteran players saying that are rally behind Matt McGloin, who was supposed to be the Raider starter. He started the game against Denver and he gets hurt. So just from based off their performance against the Broncos last Sunday in Denver, you know, chance to win the division on the line. McGlynn goes down. Connor Cook, who hasn't dressed all year, is thrown into action in his first game. The way they performed, it did not look like they were ready, you know, get ready for that, and they were not playing inspired after the injury of a car, after everyone said that, you know, they were going to rally behind everyone and get it done. You could tell it's taking a toll on them. The morale, from what I've gathered, it was very low, especially after the game against Indy when it happened. Going into Denver, it seems like it's a little more positive this week. Coach Del Rio said that they are going to move past this. He's tired of talking about it. But, you know, they got to come and be ready to play on Saturday in Houston, because Houston has the number one ranked defense, and they're going to go up against a rookie quarterback, and that's not a good sign if they can't get that running game going, as it failed to get going against Houston the first time they played on Monday night.
All right, okay, thank you for that.
And, we'll stay on Oakland for a little bit. You know, we were going to get into our picks. Reggie will be joining us here a little bit later, but I already know our picks. I'm kind of doing the same thing we've done in previous years. We're going to get our guests to do their picks as well. So, Cody, we'll start with you, and me and Coach will chime in with ours because Reggie also agreed with Coach across the board. But, you know, do you think Oakland's going to win this game?
I don't want to sound like a homer, but yes, I think the Raiders win this game.
Okay. And you can correct me if I'm wrong here, Coach, but I know I had Oakland. I know our off-air producer, Billy, had Oakland, and I believe you and Reggie had Houston, correct?
Yes, that's correct. I actually chose Houston based upon the fact that they lost their quarterback. It's very difficult to put a rookie, you know, in this type of situation this late in the season, or the new part of the season, what we call the playoffs. At this point, it's a different type of animal, and I probably would have gone a different way had there have been a couple of games under his belt, but being that he was on the back end of the season and going into the playoffs, that's just always tough for any rookie quarterback to face coming into the season like that.
All right, well, I will, Cody, I'm going to help your case. I don't know if you guys have used this out there at 95.7, but our off-air producer, Billy, is a big diehard Ohio State fan. I'm a diehard Michigan fan. We're very familiar with Connor Cook and what he can do in a game, as he's torched both of our college teams before. And while Connor Cook, to steal the line from draft day, I'm pretty sure that none of his teammates nor probably his own family members went to his birthday party. Connor Cook shows up in big games. So if he's going to show up in a big game, I don't know that there's a bigger game than this one, right?
No, and Connor even said, you know, he believes the experience of playing at the Horseshoe and playing at the Big House, playing all those games, mm-hmm. you know, against Michigan, Ohio State, even playing for Michigan State and all those big games for Sparty, that this should help him and it's not going to bother him going into the game down in Houston.
Right. Yeah, I've just it's one of the upsets that I'm picking, and I can't believe that last I saw, I think Houston was favored, or at least I'm picking a road game in the road team in that one. Let's move on real quick. We are, I think we will all homer out on this one. Who do you have, the Miami Dolphins or the Pittsburgh Steelers on Sunday afternoon?
So, someone that grew up in right outside of Pittsburgh, not a Steelers fan though, but the Steelers offense. They're a scary team if they can get that offense going with the triplets with Roethlisberger, Le'Veon Bell, Antonio Brown. The Steelers' defense is not that great, but their offense is just way too good. So I think the Steelers will win this game and move on to next weekend.
Then, unless I'm mistaken, when we all agree on this show, you hear this thing.
Oh, it's funny because it's true.
Pretty amazing that we can have five people agree on the same game. But, you know, Coach, do you see it playing out pretty much the same way Cody just said?
I do. I think, again, that Pittsburgh is just overall personnel-wise has a lot more depth on their team. I think Miami still struggles in some areas. I think they're a consistent team, and they find their ways to put themselves in the playoffs. However, I don't think they have enough to stop Pittsburgh. And then when you start factoring in injuries, that's where some of the problems will come in later.
Yeah, I agree. Miami's on their way. They've turned the corner. Adam Gase apparently is a quarterback whisperer, but He can yell at – he could yell all he wanted at this one, and they're not going to end up with a victory. Moving on, the late Saturday game is the Detroit Lions going to Seattle. Coach, if I'm correct, you and Reggie both had Seattle in that one, right?
That's correct. I like what Detroit is doing right now. I think they're moving in the right direction. Again, I think they still have some pieces missing, more especially, in the receiving core, some other things happening with the running back, some things up front. So I think they're moving in the right direction. But, again, I don't think they have enough to put away a Seattle, especially going to Seattle to do that.
All right. Cody, who do you have?
So, this is a good one because this is Matthew Stafford's third career playoff game after being number one overall pick in the draft before. Seattle, people think Seattle's reeling. They're dysfunctional. There's problems with them. Coach Carroll lost the team. There's now those reports that, the Lions want to keep Jim Caldwell, to keep continuity in Detroit. I think Seattle at home, just give me Seattle at home. I like the Lions. I like the direction they're going, a year after losing Calvin Johnson. But even without a viable running game, I think the Seahawks win this one. It's not a blowout, but I think Seattle wins by touchdown.
Wow. We would homer out if it wasn't for the point man of this team, and that would be myself, who I'm calling the Detroit upset on this one. I do believe that when you go 3-3 in your last six games, that qualifies as reeling. And since I didn't hear the Beat the Bookie segment, I don't know what Fortinball would have took. So I'm going to have to go with the gut feeling. I think the Detroit Lions are going to beat Seattle. It's going to come down to a Matt Prater kick, possibly even in overtime. But to me, this could be the best game of the entire first week, because that moves us into our next game, the New York Giants at the Green Bay Packers. Coach, for obvious reasons, I'm pretty sure we all know that you're not a Team Eli fan this week, correct?
That's correct. I think this is going to be the game where, as you're speaking of Detroit and Seattle, I'm speaking the epic game is going to be New York and Green Bay. I think they both are teams that are equally balanced where they are right now. I think there are some gaps still on both sides of the ball. However, you have two great quarterbacks, and you just can't count Green Bay out of this. I think that this is the game that's going to determine who ends up in the NFC Championship, believe it or not.
All right, Cody, who do you have in this one?
It's an interesting game because this is now the third time that Eli and the Giants faced or had the Lambeau to face the Pack. They beat him in 07 and won the Super Bowl the first time. They beat Brett Favre the second time. They beat Aaron Rodgers and they went to the Super Bowl the second time. This will be a good game. I think the Packers are close to a 5-point favorite. Green Bay is on a roll heading into the playoffs. They could have the MVP. Well, a lot of people's MVP, which I still think is Matt Ryan. It's tough, but I think Aaron Rodgers gets over the hump. I think Green Bay wins this one to move on to next weekend.
Well, that is definitely a good thing because that means
it's funny because it's true.
Yeah, and the reason why I don't think that this game's going to live up to the last game we just talked about is the Giants this year, they either show up or they don't. And I feel like they're not going to show up this week. In fact, all the receivers would apparently rather party in Miami with Justin Bieber than they would actually practice or take a day off. So, yeah, I got the Green Bay Packers in this one. Aaron Rodgers is the hottest quarterback going right now, even though I think we all here on the show agree with you, Cody, that Matt Ryan is the hands-down MVP. So, let's see. To recap, myself, Billy, and you, Cody, like Oakland, where Coach and Reggie are taking Houston. In the we all like Pittsburgh to just absolutely run over those fishes of the sea down south. I'm taking Detroit as the lone wolf, and you guys all have Seattle, and we all homer out for Green Bay. So if you've been following along with our picks, and you decide you want to bet based off of the games we pick, I would suggest you pick somebody besides myself. But since you mentioned that, Cody, we will get into that a little bit about the MVP race. What's kind of your case that you would make for Matt Ryan?
I just think the year Ryan had, I'll go out and put this out on the limb. I did not expect the Falcons to have the year they're having. I didn't expect them to win the NFC South division. Ryan really surprised everyone. Dan Quinn is doing a great job with that team. Julio Jones, Mohamed Sanu, that offense is hot, is explosive. They end up finishing 30 points a game, correct? Or close to it?
Like 34, I think. 34.3 or something.
That's incredible. The year Matt Ryan had, I mean, I think his TD to interception ratio was like 34-7, if I'm correct.
Yeah.
I just think what he did this year with the Falcons, shout out to Aaron Rodgers for what he did with Green Bay and the role they're on. But Matt Ryan he won so many big games and he stepped up in the clutch and they needed him. And it's good because, he always had that knock where he can't win the big game. So I want it to happen where he can. You know, maybe the Falcons go on a little run. They go back to the NFC title game where they reach it in 2012 season against the 49ers. So I think Ryan should get it. You know, a lot of people are going to vote for Aaron Rodgers. I do think, though, and I'm not trying to homer out, but if Derek Carr doesn't go down with that injury, I think Derek might be the MVP just because the Raiders could have probably finished 13-3. They won their first division title since 2002. And Derek took the Raiders back from being 7-9 last year and 3-13 in his first year to potentially 13-3, an AFC West title in their first playoff race since 2002 when they lost the Super Bowl to Tampa Bay.
And I want to say about Derek Carr in a second, but Coach, do you still agree that hands down it should be Matt Ryan as MVP this year?
As you know, I've always been very critical of Matt Ryan from Boston College. But the one thing I said at the earlier part of the year that Matt not only has to command, but he has to demand. And I think what he finally has come to the conclusion and he's comfortable with is demanding excellence out of his football team. He's demanding excellence out of himself. He has that look now and he has that confidence to go out and win. So, remember I told you the road to a championship is very simple. You have to first go out and start winning games. And once you start winning, then you have to expect to win. And then once you expect to win, the next step is you don't care how you win. And I think that's what Atlanta has done. They're throwing to a plethora of receivers. I don't think there's anybody in the league right now that hands down can stop them. I think the only way Atlanta gets out of this and possibly not make the Super Bowl is if they just simply stop themselves. But right now, Matt Ryan is on the roll. The offense is on the roll. The team is on the roll. So I would agree. I think that, he most definitely is deserving of the MVP this year.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. Like I've said all year, the problem is with their team is their defense has trouble giving up a lot of points. But as long as the offense can outscore what the defense has given up, then the sky's the limit for them. I do think Matt Ryan, I was at the game Sunday, and I turned to everybody around me, and I said, if Matt Ryan puts up at least 250 with three touchdowns, I said, even though the Saints can't stop a runny nose, I said, if he can put up even that, it'll be the final nail in the coffin. The only reason they were leaving him in as long as they did on Sunday was to make that MVP case. So, to me, it is Matt Ryan, even though, Cody, I do agree, the only guy who was, anywhere close to him as far as neck and neck, in my opinion, because I disqualified Brady, which was hard to do as a Brady homer. But, also as a Cowboy, big-time Cowboy fan, I don't think Zeke or Dak did as much as Matt Ryan or Derek Carr did. And I would actually – I'm going to steal this from Colin Cowherd, who brought up, doesn't it kind of prove that at least the AFC MVP should be Derek Carr? Because look what happened to the Raiders as soon as he got hurt. It's almost like trying to just save the ship now.
I mean, yeah. I mean, that's a great point because, you look for the drop-off in the QB play for the Raiders from Derek to McGoin, who is a serviceable backup. I mean, he did beat Houston in his first career start in 2013 out of Penn State as a undrafted, pretty much walk-on for the Raiders throughout the season. And then he goes down, you have Connor Cook, who has never played a game as a fourth-round draft pick, who actually, it's a funny story, because he was actually, the rumor was that he was going to be drafted by the Cowboys. And, so what would happen? Say the Cowboys take Connor Cook. Are the Cowboys winning the NFC East, and are they getting the first-round bye like they did with Dak and Zeke? So you'll never know, but yeah, I agree. Derek Carr means so much to the Raiders for what happened. The injury just came at a terrible time. He's in good spirits about it, but it just shows that if you don't have a you know, a great backup quarterback, which not a lot of teams do, you know, it really hinders the way your team plays. And if the Raiders, like the Raiders, just looked awful on Sunday against Denver, in one of those get up games where they could have won the division, and they just laid an egg pretty much. So I agree, Derek is the AFC MVP. Tom Brady had a great year, being on a suspension, but how much of that goes, you know, how much of that should be credited to Bill Belichick for coaching with Jimmy Garoppolo and Jacoby Brissett? You know, they lost Gronk. Le'Veon Bell had a great year as their back, you know, but in their defense, which Matt Patricia doesn't get enough credit. I know he's got a lot of looks to be a head coach, but I believe the Chargers and Rams have reached out. But I wouldn't put everything on Brady because he's had a great year, but Belichick, you know, could be arguably the greatest coach ever. So, but yes, Derek Carr is the MVP of the AFC if he doesn't, you know, even with him being hurt. And if he isn't hurt, I think he wins the NFL MVP award overall just for the way he played all year and leading the Raiders back to the playoffs.
Absolutely. And, of course, I am Jeremy the Impact York, and the coach, Haywood Hill, is also on. And we are on. Our special guest right now is Cody Elias from 95.7 The Game, Bay Area. Let's talk a little coaching carousel real quick in the next handful of minutes. Because a lot of this is also going to have to do with San Francisco, which I know you guys field a lot of calls. I'm surprised they're still recognized as a football team after this year, but, you know, stranger things have happened. But the current open jobs right now, obviously, is the Rams, Jacksonville, Denver because of Kubiak leaving health reasons. San Francisco's looking for GM and a head coach, San Diego and Buffalo. You know what, Coach, let me ask you first, which of these is the most appealing and which of these is the least appealing? Like, I know we can shoot down the rumors that that you have withdrew your name from the hat of these six jobs, but if you were in the running, hey, it's something I get asked, so I want to shoot that rumor down. But, you know, which is most appealing, which is the least appealing?
I think the most appealing right now probably would be Denver because of the pieces that they have there. I think probably the least appealing right now would still be Jacksonville. They're a young team, but they still have a lot of work to still do. They're moving in the right direction, but I don't know how patient that owner will be with the next coach. I think he's going to have a veteran coach come in because I think he wants some quick turnaround now in the success of that team. So, and everything else would kind of fall in the middle based upon what your player contracts look like. I think a lot of the coaches will be looking – very closely as to the veteran, you know, the veterans that they're going to be able to retain with inside of these organizations, and does a lot of these teams have the upside with the players right now versus what's going to be coming out in the draft? And you know, you have to also take into consideration the rookie contracts and how long they are now. So those are some of the things that coaches have to think about as they go in and interview for these jobs. You know, is it a good fit now, or will it be a good fit 3 years from now? Will I be given enough time to do so? So I'm sure that a lot of the coaches that are offensive coordinators as well as defensive coordinators that are being sought after right now really have to sit down and take a good hard look at the reality of the organizations that they're going to be interviewing with and if they're going to be a good fit for those organizations as well as those organizations being a good fit for themselves.
And then, Cody, before you answer the same question I just gave to Coach, can we go ahead and shoot down the rumor also that you will not be taking the general manager position in San Francisco?
I know that rumor's been floated. You know, Jed York and myself and Parag Marathe, the president of the 49ers, and Al Guido, we're all real close. We hang out a lot. They come to me on a lot of football decisions. That's why the team finished 2-14 this season. So, yeah, I will not be interviewing for the job in Santa Clara.
All right, and the other rumor I was asked right before we came on is Lorenzo Neal going to be the new head coach in Buffalo? Because I've heard that one too, and I said y'all was going to check with the expert that would know.
You know what? That's a good one. I could see Lowe being a good NFL head coach. Hey, Buffalo, you know, I don't know how much he likes the cold. They get a lot of snow there, but they have a really good running game with Shady McCoy and Gillislee, and you know, Lowe being one of the greatest fullbacks of all time,
right.
I think he could win there. He could possibly win there. Well, Buffalo, I mean, all you have to do is go 8-8 in Buffalo, and they'll be happy. But you know, because they've been in the club since '99. Actually, the last time, how ironic would it be if Lorenzo Neal, the guy that single-handedly ruined the city of Buffalo since 1999 for what happened in the Music City Miracle, was now the head coach and took him back to the playoffs? the irony in that.
It would be the feel-good story, even though I do agree with you. Lowe is a warm weather guy, and I would imagine that cold weather and the Buffalo weather to him would be ferocious.
I agree. That would be ferocious. It would not work out well. I think that, you know, there would be a lot of complaining, a lot of ferocious hot takes flying around that locker room. Half the guys would be gone, and it would spiral out of control, unfortunately.
Ferocious cold takes. That could be a whole new segment.
That's pretty good. He could do a weekly hit in Buffalo, a weekly hit on his radio show in Buffalo, Ferocious Cold Takes.
Absolutely. And as long as you give a shout-out at least to the Impact and Coach over here for that idea, then we're good with it. And Lowe didn't even have to mention our name. But, you know, to you, of these six positions, which one is the most appealing and which one is the least appealing?
So I actually agree with Coach. I think Denver is the clear-cut number one and most intriguing job. They have all the pieces there with Von Miller. That defense, still, you know, the defense, you know, against the run was not that great this year, but their pass defense was still was the best. They have pieces there. They have pieces on offense. They still have Emmanuel Sanders and Demaryius Thomas. They have a couple good young backs with Devontae Booker and the other running back's name is C.J. Anderson will be back next year. You kind of see what you have with quarterback with Trevor Siemian. You could maybe have Tony Romo. Maybe Kirk Cousins lands there. Trent Baalke could end up there as an executive because that's what the rumors have floated because him and Elway are close. So I think Denver's the most intriguing. The least intriguing, I'm going to have to disagree with Coach. I still think the least intriguing job is, unfortunately, the Santa Clara 49ers. A lot of dysfunction in the organization. You fire Jim Harbaugh, who was arguably the greatest coach you had in the last 25 years. And then you move on. You go to Jim Tomsula, who goes 5-11. You fire him after a season. You bring in Chip Kelly, who, you know, a great offensive mind. I don't think he was given nearly enough time to do what he could with the 49ers. The personnel there was not good. He changed his attitude. If you guys get a chance, there's a fantastic article from Charles Robinson of Yahoo on the whole situation of how Chip only lasted 347 days with the 49ers because he really wasn't given the right opportunity to succeed. He's fired. Jed York's up there again for the third time in 3 years, talking about bringing another coach, reestablishing a championship culture, you know, working to get the coach and GM working together. I hate to say it because as a fan of the 49ers, they maybe could be trending in the right direction depending on who they want to hire. But I think they have to make the right move, and I think they should look at the GM first and let the GM pick the coach because you don't want the situation where you hire a head coach what they did with Mike Nolan in 2006, and he hired his own GM. And it was just a train wreck for the 49ers until they brought in Harbaugh, who did not get along with Trent Baalke and Jed York, but he won, and that's all that mattered.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm going to float a few theories out there. You're welcome to take those out to your Bay Area brethren there. I actually think wherever Kyle Shanahan goes, because he is going to leave, and as much as Reggie here on the show doesn't want to believe that, he's going to leave and be a head coach. Wherever Kyle Shanahan goes, his quarterback is going to be Kirk Cousins because they know each other very well, and it'll work very well. And then know that I believe Josh McDaniel is going to leave the Patriots, and your new offensive coordinator up there, who is not going to run his own system, he's going to run the Patriots system. So get that out of the way. But I think Chip Kelly, who is very good friends with Bill Belichick, is going to be the new offensive coordinator in New England.
I agree. I think that with Kyle Shanahan, I think Shanahan will leave. I don't know where. The Rams is an interesting job, so I don't think that Cousins will follow him, that they'll get Cousins to go there. Santa Clara, San Francisco, I think that could be a fit for him, and they could bring in Kirk Cousins because they have $82 million in cap space. So I do agree with him leaving and, you know, maybe taking Cousins with him. If you're McDaniels, I mean, there was a report out that McDaniels, even if he's offered a 49er job, he might not take it. Why would you want to leave? Ride out the years with Brady, see what happens, and then, you know, 5 years from now when you're 45 years old, you could be a head coach. You had all these years with Brady, maybe you win another Super Bowl ring. You can get it, but, you know, if McDaniels wants to take the 49er job, good luck to him because if they do that, you take Nick Caserio, one of the Patriots executives who's supposed to interview at the 49ers over the weekend as well. You could do that, and you have the Patriot system. And then Yes, I agree. I think Chip Kelly will end up with the Patriots because Belichick reached out to him last year after the Eagles fired him and told him, hey, you know, come regroup, take a year off, can, you know, come work under me because they're friends. And Chip immediately took the job with the 49ers, and then he fired, you know, less than a year later. So I can see Chip being in New England. I think that's an interesting fit with him and Brady because of the up-tempo offense. You know, Chip would have to adjust how he coaches. But, you know, there is one theory I want to float to you guys. If Houston loses to the Raiders on Saturday, what are the chances that Bill O'Brien gets fired? And they're, not only is Houston looking for another coach, how many calls does Bill O'Brien get over the weekend to come interview for jobs like San Francisco, Denver, San Diego, L.A. Chargers, whatever they're going to be, Jacksonville, and the other head coaching vacancies?
Well, before Coach answers, the quick answer to both is I'll give you 3-1 odds that if Houston does lose, that Bill O'Brien is out. And the quick answer to your second question is faster than Andy Reid was hired in Kansas City.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think Houston can afford to let him go. Right now, I don't see anybody that is out there that's going to be so attractive that they want to go that way. I like to back up and talk about the situation with Chip Kelly. I don't know if his pride will allow him to go into a structured system like New England. I think that, you know, it would be a lot of biting of the tongue and filling his mouth full of blood, in a sense. I think that he has adjusted a lot in his personality, but I think the core of him won't allow him to do that. So even if he did, it would be something that he would really, really – I mean, you got to think he's used to being in control. And to have a situation where you're under Belichick and have Tom Brady at the helm of that organization, I don't know if that's a great fit for him right now. I think he would just probably take the year off and wait to kind of roll the dice to see what would come up next. I don't think that he's an immediate hire, but if he just wants to stay in coaching and he's willing to agree to the terms and what they have in New England, then I think it might fit for him there. Going back to the Houston situation, I doubt he's leaving. I don't think Houston is looking for a head coach anytime soon.
Well, that definitely could be interesting. And last thing, Cody, as we finish up here with Cody Elias from 957 The Game Bay Area, because I know there's some great hockey games on, and you're probably going to go to one of them here in a minute. So I will let you on with your evening with that. Coach of the Year, pretty much. Is this a slam dunk for Jack Del Rio because of where they came from last year, or does somebody like a Dan Quinn or a Belichick actually get the credit for what they've done this year?
It's a great theory because we actually, you know, on the show today we discussed this, and, you know, a lot of people will say Jack Del Rio gets it. They went from 7-9 to 12-4. They almost won a division. Belichick did a great job with Brady. I wouldn't say it's a slam without Brady, but I wouldn't say it's a slam dunk that Del Rio wins, because Adam Gase did a hell of a job in his first year at the Dolphins, taking them to the playoffs. It'll be more than likely be Jack Del Rio, because it should be a clean sweep with him and then Reggie McKenzie being the executive of the year because of what Oakland was able to do with their offseason and, you know, just getting back to the playoffs. But I wouldn't say it's a slam dunk because there'll be a lot of people that make the case for Belichick, Adam Gase. Andy Reid will get some looks because of what he did with the Chiefs, you know, after winning the division. So I wouldn't say slam dunk, but I think Del Rio is probably going to be the odds-on favorite to win the Coach of the Year. But I wouldn't be surprised if someone like Belichick, who sometimes doesn't get enough credit for what he does because of having Brady, but this year it's a little different, will get some looks in. And Dan Quinn did a great job with the Falcons. Caldwell with the Lions. McCarthy getting the Packers to get back on track. Another name, too, is Ben McAdoo. He did a really good job in his first year as a rookie coach with the Giants. Kind of same situation with the Dolphins. You know, they've had the talent. It's just, you know, I think the team was just, you know, a little out of it last year. That's why Tom Coughlin was let go. But I'd say Del Rio wins, but I wouldn't say it's a slam dunk that he's going to be the, like, you know, unanimous coach of the year this year.
I think that's fair enough. Coach, do you agree with that?
I do. I think right now this is the first time that you don't have a clearly defined coach of the year. There were so many scenarios with injuries and just a lot of things that took place with a lot of the coaches within the league this year that all of them arguably have a shot. So I think all of the coaches that are mentioned are well-deserving of the opportunity of being you know, coach of the year. It's just going to be one of those toss-ups. I think it'll be just one of those things in the ninth hour that that coach will emerge, and I don't think anybody in the NFL is going to be upset who wins that based upon the scenarios that were given just a moment ago.
Absolutely. And like I said, Cody, I'm going to let you on with your evening because I thought of something better than the great hockey action that's on right now. You got to go break the news to Lorenzo Neal that he's not going to be the Buffalo new head coach, and he might need some consoling after that.
Well, you know, I'll let Lo know. Hopefully, you know, he's okay with that. He handles that news well. And actually, the hockey game you're talking about that I want to watch is not the Shark Wild. It's the Washington Capitals and the Columbus Blue Jackets, where Columbus is going for their 17th straight win. I'm tying a record that was set by, yes, my Pittsburgh Penguins back in the early 90s. Right now, Washington winning 2-0 with 7 minutes left in the first period.
All right, you guys still with us?
Yes, I'm still with you.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know what happened there. Right as he was, finishing up, suddenly the sound went out, and at least my headset. I guess you guys could still hear. But yeah, sorry, Cody, that I couldn't give you a great outro. He is Cody Elias from 957 The Game Bay Area, and actually here at the studio, our on-air producer has that very game, the Capitals game, on currently. So, okay, good. Cody texted them, and they're letting him know what happened. But we're going to go to a short break, and as soon as we get back from the break, we're going to have our next feature guest on. And, of course, that would be Wes Durham from just legendary broadcaster, but he's also from the Falcons Radio Network. We'll be right back after these messages.
Jeremy, the Impact York from Endzone here. Would you or your business like to advertise with Endzone? It's easier than you think. With many packages available, we've got the perfect deal to help you promote your business to a whole new audience. All you have to do is contact us at 3endzone@gmail.com for more info and to get started today. Let us help you grow your business.
And we're back here in the Falcon Zone. It is Jeremy, the Impact York, and it is the coach Haywood Hill. Reggie may join us a little bit later on. Just finished up with Cody Elias from 957 The Game. Always fun to talk Raiders and the Santa Clara 49ers, as he calls them out there. He does a fantastic job at 957. But as I said, I want to bring in our feature guest for the night because I'm super excited to have him on. He always does the great call with Dave Archer and calls some really good ACC games as well. Among the famous Calvin Johnson call that you may remember him from at Georgia Tech. But he is our featured guest on the Impact Hotline. He is Wes Durham. How you doing, Mr. Durham?
Jeremy, I'm great. Please call me Wes. Great to be with you guys.
It is, like I said, you're on with the Coach Haywood Hill and myself, Jeremy. It is fantastic to get you on. When I found out that you were going to be on, I may jumped a little high and knocked the ceiling tile out, but how are you doing this evening?
I'm fine, thank you, and I appreciate Billy reaching out to me on Twitter, and I'm glad it worked out in the midst of my travel this week that I could visit with you guys.
Absolutely. Were you in the Dome Sunday for that?
Oh, absolutely, yeah, no question. We our broadcast was on the air as normal, and it was an unbelievable environment there at the end, and you know, I'm delighted for the team, and in particular Coach Quinn and the players, that they're going to get a bye week, and they had such a strong finish to the regular season.
Oh, yeah, they definitely did. And a lot of times, even I was at the game Sunday, and so that I didn't have to hear some of the Saints hecklers, or they're great diehard fans, as it was up in the section we were in. I actually had my headset where half my headset was in my ear, the other in my friend's ear, and we were listening to yours and Dave's call, because it's the best way to me to watch a Falcons game.
Well, I appreciate that. We've been very fortunate. Dave's great to work with. We've become great friends, obviously, over the years, and it's just a real blessing to have our entire crew there, to be honest. We've been fortunate. We haven't had many changes at all in our booth, not just on the air, but our game engineer, our game producer, our stats and research people, our spotter, even John on the sidelines has been with us now 6 straight years. And so that's very important to the continuity of our broadcast. And I hope the folks that follow our games either week in, week out, or every once in a while understand how important that is to maybe the product they enjoy on Sundays as well.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Coach, I think you had a question.
One of the things I must admit, Wes, that enlightens me so often when listening to you do the play calling is that you have this ability to bring it alive. And I think that is one of the greatest talents that any sports broadcaster can do or announcers, to be able to sit in a room, and if you don't have the TV there, you can just literally bring those plays alive. And I just find that fascinating.
Well, I appreciate that very much. It's a labor of love for me, to be honest, guys. I mean, I've been very fortunate to – this is all I've ever really wanted to do was do play-by-play. And I had a tremendous influence with my dad in the business for a long, long time. And so, I kind of ran for this at an early age and been fortunate to grow a little by little as we move along. And, you know, for the last 13 years to do the National Football League has been an unbelievable blessing. And to be doing it professionally now for 28 years total has really been a lot of fun. And, you know, the games lend themselves to the kind of, I mean, you get a 75-yard touchdown run by Devontae Freeman, you better make it sound good or else you're not doing a very good job. So I've been fortunate to have the opportunity to do the games and then even more blessed to see some unbelievable talent athletically in which to call those games. And that's made it even more appealing, I guess.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And like Coach said, that's maybe it's just the young broadcaster in me that, you know, my whole life at least, I always liked the people like yourself. And Dave Cohen does a great job at Georgia State. And
sure,
obviously the Vince Gullings of the world and the people that you feel like you can close your eyes even if you're there live and listen to the call. And it's almost it's like reading a good book. It's you almost don't want to see the visual form because the ideas dancing in your head are usually way better than real life anyway. So what kind of goes into your head as you're trying to make one of these calls? Is there like a certain way you try to attack it, or do you just try to call what you see?
Well, basically, you're a lot of the things that happen on Sunday during a Falcons game are a result of your preparation during the week. And the best analogy that I use for most folks is that Sunday's kind of an open book test, and you need to know the information and have it prepared in such a way that when the game starts to unfold, if you're organized and prepared, you know, it's actually pretty easy to do. And I'm not going to say that every Sunday's easy, because you could have a wide variety of things that occur during the course of a game. But for me, you know, it's pretty much the basics to start a play. And then once the play happens, how it evolves ultimately determines, you know, what the call is. I mean, if it's just a 4-yard run sometimes and early in the game, it's just a 4-yard run. But you want to make sure you identify the player, identify the tackle. You want the people who aren't at the game, who are good enough to bring a headset like yourself and listen. You want the people that are driving in their car on a Sunday afternoon through Atlanta or somewhere in the state of Georgia, you want them to also feel like they're at the game as well. So that lends to the creativity, I guess, in some respects. But at the same time, the core elements of play-by-play don't change very much, whether it's a Falcons game on Sunday for me or whether it was last night doing ACC basketball in Syracuse, New York, or you know, Sunday when I'll be doing a Duke-Boston College game at Cameron Indoor Stadium or an ACC football game on Saturdays in the fall or Georgia Tech years ago. I mean, the core elements just don't change at all, guys. It's really basic. To use a football analogy, it's blocking and tackling if you set it up the right way.
Definitely so. And, Coach, I know you have a prior engagement you got to get to, so definitely appreciate you joining us here, and we'll catch you next week.
Absolutely, Jeremy. Thanks again.
But let's see. Actually, Billy, who couldn't be on with us because he does more of our off-air producing, had a few questions. Let me see. I did have them. Oh, I did have it. Okay. It's also a question I had, but since he actually told me what it was, I'll give him the credit for it. You know, we were listening to the flagship earlier, and you said that Dave Archer kind of defined statistically why Matt Ryan should be the MVP. Is there something in particular that maybe you saw, or is there a stat that he read off that just jumps off the page and says he has to be the MVP because of this?
Well, to me, the one stat that I saw last week that I buy into right away is that I think the way the regular season ended, going into the last week of regular season play, Matt had the fourth highest pass efficiency rating in NFL history. And the three guys above him all were the MVP, and the two guys behind him all won the MVP. Now, those particular seasons, two of the five belonged to Peyton Manning, and I think Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady were MVPs in two of the other slots. So that being said, if Matt Ryan has had the third or fourth highest passer efficiency rating in a single season in NFL history, and the three guys in front of him were MVP and the two behind him were MVP, I don't know how else anybody else could be. You know, he just had a remarkable year, Jeremy. I mean, when you start thinking about the way, you know, he took a lot of hits a year ago in the offseason, not only physically, but also from people who analyzed what he was as a player to what this has become, you know, he's had a spectacular season. And not that Tom Brady or Aaron Rodgers or some of these other folks didn't have other good years as well, but I don't think Atlanta would be anywhere near where it is success-wise if it wasn't for Matt Ryan.
Oh, I absolutely agree. And like I said, I was there live on Sunday, and I turned to everybody around us, including the passionate diehard Saints fans that were in that section as well, and I said, you know, at this point, if Matt Ryan throws for about 250 and if he has 2 to 3 touchdowns and just stays healthy, I think this is the final nail in the coffin, and this is the Falcons' way of saying he's the MVP, guys, and he's making it look too easy. And, you know, he was able to put up bigger numbers than that. If it were me, I would have pulled him a little earlier, but then again, that's why Dan Quinn is the coach, and that's why I have a radio show. But it just was a fantastic season by him. And this show in particular, we've been the first sometimes to not really jump on him, but kind of get at Matt Ryan a little bit, that we felt like he could be a little better at times, but he kind of had that weird Alex Smith-like thing where he kept going through different schemes, different coordinators. Finally, Kyle Shanahan pretty much just looked at him and said, "You're way too athletic to just stand in the pocket. I need to roll you out. If you listen to me, you know, the sky's the limit." But, I mean, he's also helped that, you know, what kind of difference has Alex Mack made for this offensive line?
To me, Alex Mack's the most important thing they did in the offseason. I mean, even the guys they drafted who ultimately have had a tremendous impact on defense and things of that nature, I still believe the most important acquisition the franchise made in any way, shape, or form in the offseason was to get Alex Mack in here. And to think he's going to play in his first playoff game next Saturday is kind of astonishing when you think of how durable he's been as a player in this league. But I think Alex Mack is basically taking control of an offensive line that many weren't sure was going to be very good, period. And he's turned it into an offensive line now that, you know, maybe outside of the five walls of granite they've got in Dallas, you know, might right. be one of the better offensive lines in the country. When you consider the fact that you got two backs, not just the quarterback, but you got two backs that have tallied, you know, almost 2,500 yards of rushing and receiving and 25 touchdowns mm-hmm. receiving and rushing as well. I mean, that's a lot about what those five guys up front do. And so I'd say Alex Mack, in my opinion, Alex Mack has been just an incredible addition to this football team from a standpoint of stability going forward, not just this year too.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And a lot of people talk, you know, I would say – it, just off the top of my head, obviously probably best running back in the league is probably Le'Veon Bell. Ezekiel Elliott put up a good case. You could say either guy in Atlanta. But as far as my dad likes to bring up, they have the best 1-2 punch with Freeman and Coleman. But I actually told him, I said, actually Atlanta can go a step further. They have the best and only 1-2-3 punch because Terran Ward is no slouch either. It's like having an A+, an A, and an A- that you could run either of those three at any time.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think the depth of the offense is something that's been also a big positive for this team. I mean, you can see it when you say that Matt's thrown touchdown passes to 13 different guys, but I think the depth of the offense is a little more than just a production piece. I think it's about the growth, you know, outside of the headliners. Guys like, you know, Teron Ward. I think Taylor Gabriel's been a tremendous addition. You know, you've got four tight ends that have caught touchdown passes, things of that nature. So there's no question they've got a lot of firepower offensively. They got a lot of depth offensively. And I think we're starting to see here, at least in probably the last third of the season, after the bye week, we're starting to see some growth on the defensive side of the ball. And that's an exciting piece, too, as you look ahead not only to next week and whatever remains in this season and wherever it goes, but also in the coming years as well.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the fact that Vic Beasley finally had another bookend on the other side to allow him to be the beast-like pass rusher he can be. If I was – unless I'm mistaken, I believe he finished with 15 and a half sacks and led the NFL this year.
That's correct. Yes, he did.
But just to, you know, because a lot of people were like, well, he's a bust. You don't grab somebody like that early. He's part of a system at Clemson. They just churn out these guys who just are role players. It's good to see that, you know, all the naysayers can finally be quieted by this and to see that the culture that they're building in Atlanta is one where they're not only drafting well, but they're developing these guys.
Well, I think Beasley came along at a time when they were still organizing this defense. And I think a lot of people's expectations were probably based on what he had done at Clemson. And he had to come here and learn not only new terminology, learn, you know, all the intangibles about being a professional football player, but he also had to learn, you know, kind of how he was going to fit in the defense. And I think if you take his last 20 games as a pro, okay, the 16 this year plus the last four of his rookie season, you'd see kind of what you had expected to see when he was taken in the, you know, in the first 10 picks out of Clemson. And I think his best football is ahead of him. Remember now, he went to Clemson as a tight end. He didn't go to Clemson as a defensive player. He went to Clemson on the offensive side of the ball and then got flipped over to the defensive side. Marion Hobby and Brent Venables crafted him into a pass rusher. They found a way for him to be an impactful guy on first down as much as he was on third down. And I think that's what you've seen in Atlanta is a little bit of that growth as well. But he had to be fit into the system that Dan Quinn was bringing here. Not too different than a guy like Courtney Upshaw. I think Upshaw, to me, is a real good indicator, Jeremy, of guys who maybe it didn't work in other places. And Upshaw's come here and has been a marvelous piece inside for Atlanta in the pressure game. And he's going to play a big role in the playoffs as well. I think he's the kind of guy that in the playoffs can really take off here.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I definitely agree. As soon as they signed Courtney Upshaw, I said, if you guys could just see the depth and see the monster that they're building here with this defense, there's so many playmakers. A lot of times you get those cast-offs from other places. New England is famous for doing it, for taking people off the scrap heap somewhere else and really showcasing what they can do. You know, like I said, it's just a testament to what Dan Quinn and Thomas Dimitrov are doing here in Atlanta and the fact that they have an owner in Arthur Blank who allows them. You know, he's always said that he's not really a football guy. He enjoys football, but he doesn't understand everything about it. So when you don't understand something, you should either find an expert around you who does or surround yourself with people smarter than you. And Arthur Blank's done a good job of this.
Yeah, no question. I think his decade and change of owning this football team has been very dynamic on the field and off. And, you know, it's hard to win every Sunday in the National Football League. They've done a really good job of trying to maintain a degree of continuity, which is hard. And then, obviously, they've backed it up with the resources. And so it's been an unbelievable experience to kind of watch it all come together. But since he took this team over now, what, in 2003, I guess it was, there's no question that he's done everything possible to try and make it a powerful organization in the National Football League. But we're still determined by the production of winning and losing in this league and everywhere, I guess, in competitive sports. But there's nobody more excited than Mr. Blank about the way this thing is going this year for sure, and what optimism there is in the future as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I believe Reggie will be joining us here in a second. But before he joins us, we were talking a little bit earlier when we had Cody on and the coach. Do you think Kyle Shanahan is going to leave for a head coaching gig? And if so, where do you think he could go?
Jeremy, I don't know. I think Kyle's going to be in a very advantageous position, though, and it will really be about fit. I think he's got to decide if he's if he's ready to be a head coach, and if he is, what's the best spot for him to be the head coach. And, you know, just because your name gets bandied about out there sometimes, you got to make sure that when you go do this for the first time like Kyle will, that it's a really good opportunity. And you got to have a comfort level with not only what you're going to do with you and your staff, but how your relationship's going to be with the front office. And I think we're seeing more and more in the NFL that the synergy of that GM and coach position is vitally important to the success of the team. I mean, John Schneider and Pete Carroll in Seattle is a great example. Bill Belichick runs his own shop, obviously, in New England. He's judge and jury there. But you look at some of the other organizations that have had a lot of success, and even Dave Gettleman and Ron Rivera went through some bumpy roads in Carolina, and this year certainly didn't turn out the way they'd hoped, but they've made the moves in the last 3 years that put the Panthers in the front of the NFC South. So I think if you're Kyle Shanahan, you've grown up around this sport, you've played major college football, you've got a great coaching pedigree, and if you want to become a head coach, then you're going to know where the good opportunity is and where the best fit is for you. And that's all we can ever wish for somebody who's been as successful as he's been here in a couple of years.
Absolutely. And joining us, he had a prior engagement as well, but joining us real quickly in the Falcon Zone is the King ATL and Reggie Walker. How you doing, Reggie? Apparently he's not. Bad phone line. Call us back here, Reggie. But I don't want to keep – it happens. If we don't have a technical glitch in every show, then we think the piano is going to fall on us. So we're used to dealing with anything you can come up with. But before I let you go, I'm gonna, if you don't mind, I'm going to get your picks for the game this weekend. We like to kind of do a celebrity pool thing a little bit just to see how wrong we can be and see if I can finish last even with other people picking.
Okay.
But who do you like in the Oakland versus Houston game?
Gee whiz, Daryl LaMonica, quarterback in the Raiders.
Yeah, right?
Let's see. I'll take Houston. Billy O'Brien was a GA at Georgia Tech when I started doing the game, so I'll side with OB on that one.
All right. That's a pretty good reason on that one. I think that's a whole coin flip game anyway. Miami is going to travel to Pittsburgh. Who do you like in that one?
Pittsburgh. It's going to be really cold.
Absolutely. And last time I checked, fish freeze on ice. Detroit is going to travel to Seattle.
Seattle.
It's hard to argue that when I'm the only one on the show trying to pick that upset, and I'm usually wrong when I'm the only one that disagrees with everybody else. So we'll see how that works. And then the New York Football Giants are going to go to Lambeau Field and try to go 3-0 in the playoffs at that venue.
Something tells me Green Bay will win the game. I just think they're playing better right now than the Giants, although New York may have one of the better defensive units left in the playoffs. Maybe the best defensive unit left in the playoffs. I think Green Bay's playing at a very high level based on what I saw last Sunday night.
Definitely so. And like I've told people, if the MVP race was given, if the MVP award was given out like the Heisman, then I think Aaron Rodgers probably locked it up 2 weeks ago. But, you know, it's just that Matty Ice guy who's done it for 16 games that it's got to be him.
I don't disagree with you.
But like I said, I appreciate you joining us, and we'd love to have you back on another time. It's been a blast getting to talk to you, and we'll see you on later down the road. We appreciate it, Wes.
Jeremy, thank you very much. I hope you have a great new year, and I appreciate you guys asking me to join.
Absolutely. You have a great new year as well.
Bye-bye.
And that was Wes Durham from the Falcons Radio Network and ACC college basketball and football lore. And as we bring on the King AT Alien, who I think is now ready to join us. I hated you missed him there, Reggie, but I knew he had other things he
Yeah. It's always good. I mean, I listened to the latter part of his commentary. I mean, that's great. That, you know, it says a lot about Jeremy, where you're taking the show and so kudos to you for being able to get such a great commentator like Wes Durham on to listen. So I'm catching the next time, but you know, again, kudos to you for taking the show to a new height.
Oh, absolutely. And I gotta give a lot of credit to, you know, one of the new guys been working with us here, Billy Lindahl, who I worked previously on a show with and I've been good buddies with him. He's taken over some of the off air producing and such, and couldn't actually join us tonight, but definitely got to give him, he's probably listening, so give him all the props in the world there, that he was about 98% behind that entire booking. So, you know, thanks, Billy, and we were definitely glad to have Wes on.
Yes, sir.
But let's see. I lost my sheet. I got lost in talking to a legendary broadcast.
Right. While we're there, just real quick, if we can segue into it, is Coach Hill on? I'm sorry, I didn't hear whether he was on or not.
No, he had to. He had a prior engagement. The same way you had one. Yeah, he had something.
Hey, so I like to know where the standings are, because I think I'm still kicking y'all's butt. So I just wanted to make sure that I was still kicking y'all's butt.
Well. And, you know, obviously they reset in the playoffs. But I know I finished under 500, which is nothing new. And I don't think I have the updated ones in front of me. But I'm pretty sure you won, because you were up like 5 games with 4 to go. So I think you officially won the regular season.
Well, you know, and I asked that because if you recall, Coach Hill and I had a chicken wing.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So you're more than welcome to join us. I'll set the date so that you can come and join us and you can partake in my chicken wing winnings. And we'll politely slide the bill over to Coach Hill.
that's pretty tempting there. I might have to figure that one out.
Yeah, we will definitely figure. Even if we didn't go where we were planning to go, we'd go somewhere closer to
We figured out it might be worth the drive.
Hey, well, again, you're more than welcome to come join me as I gloat in my winnings.
Absolutely. And, you know, I guess that makes you, it's kind of like having 4 featured guests on tonight, because at one point it was myself and Coach, and then Cody joined us, and then as Cody left, Wes was able to join us, and then Coach had to leave, so it was myself and Wes. Wes had to leave, so now I'm on with you. So, I mean, it's been kind of a carousel of its own right here on Falcon Zone. So we'll kind of reset a little bit and go over some of this stuff, because I do want to hear – I didn't give them all my conspiracy theories, but I gave them a few to think about. But as far as the coaching carousel, and obviously you know the 6 teams that are available right now, with that being Los Angeles, Jacksonville, Denver, San Francisco, San Diego, and Buffalo. If you were a head coach, and you know, what's the most appealing job, and what's the least appealing of those 6?
The most appealing is Denver, because Denver's defense wins championships, and Denver's defense is lights out. I think, not to mention the GM. And I think this is what Wes was kind of alluding to a little bit earlier. With John Elway, is going to get you what you need to win right away, right? Whether it's Simeon or somebody in the draft, you're a quarterback and maybe a good running back away from being right back where you started, right? So, and you're a year out from the Super Bowl. So Denver's the most coveted in my mind, or would be for me as a coach. The least would probably be, let's see, San Diego, L.A., Buffalo, Denver. Who was the other two?
L.A., Jacksonville, Buffalo, San Diego, San Francisco, Denver.
Who was the first one you said? I'm sorry?
L.A., Los Angeles.
Oh, man, that's tough. I want to say I would. Well, no, it's not really Jacksonville because I think Jacksonville has the talent. I just think that
right.
the coaching is just not there. So if I had to, I guess out of everyone else, it would probably be the 49ers. The 49ers right. are really in flux. They don't have, you know, most of their defense is gone. Kaepernick is for all likelihood, unless, you know, the moon's aligned. But even if he stays, he's not really the guy to build on.
Right.
So, yeah, I think San Francisco would be my least favorite out of everyone that's available.
Yeah, I think I'd have to put them there just because, I mean, I would love to deal with my possible relatives, Jed York out there, but, I mean, they're the most dysfunctional.
He's a horrible owner. Yeah, he's a horrible owner. I mean, when you've got the fan base asking if the owner can be dismissed, so much so
right.
that the owner actually has to address it, I mean, that's
right.
not a good – that's definitely not a good place to be. It's just not. I've never heard an owner have to address the fan base clamoring for his dismissal. I mean, that was phenomenal. That was absolutely incredible to see that press conference.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And you know, I got to bring it up because I have been we've been going back and forth on this for the better part of a week or better. But you know, which of these is Kyle Shanahan going to and going to be their head coach?
I almost think he ends up in Denver. I think that's the when you talk about what Kyle brings to the table and what Denver is lacking, which is the offensive side. On top of the fact, I think I read where Gary Kubiak actually runs the same system that Kyle Shanahan runs. I mean, it's a no-brainer. I think he ends up in Denver.
And then that brought up what I brought up to Cody that I'm sure we'll have them talking in the Bay Area. If he goes to Denver, what's the likelihood that he pulls his old buddy Kirk Cousins in with him and suddenly revamps that team?
I think it's probably, I would say about 90%.
Yeah.
I think Kirk walks if he goes to Denver. I'm actually, from a fan's perspective, I'm a little concerned about Taylor Gabriel. The only thing that makes it safe is that he's a restricted free agent, so we still have the dibs, but I think he tries to take him as well.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I don't know if you heard us all homer out that we think Matt Ryan is the no-brainer MVP, but I don't think we're going to get much argument from you, right?
I mean, no. I mean, at the end of the day, and I've heard all the different pundits and all the different conversations and what it shouldn't be and what it should be and why Matt shouldn't be it versus, Tom Brady or Aaron Rodgers. And I'll say what I've said to them, those guys. I'm sorry, I got some background noise here. Tom Brady,
nope.
Number one, was suspended for 4 games. So let's just take him out of the mix. The other thing to Aaron Rodgers, yes, what he's done is phenomenal, but he's only done it for 6 games, 8 games.
Right.
You said it best. Matt has been doing it consistently the entire year. And for that, I think I would be surprised if Matt doesn't win it. Just because, you know, I still have faith in the system and I still have faith in the voters that will see it for what it is. This is about who, as an entire body, collective body, and when you talk about the collective body and what Matt has done, and this is taking my Falcons hat off. I mean, that guy, what he's the numbers and what he has done has outdone anything that those guys have done. I mean, hands down.
Absolutely. And, you know, I even brought up to Cody, who is they're part of the flagship of the Oakland Raiders out there. And I said, yeah, I'll say that Derek Carr is the AFC MVP because we see what happens once he's not in the Raiders lineup that, I mean, they're literally just trying to keep the ship from reaching the bottom of the ocean. But, you know, like I've said all night, I've said it all week long, too, this isn't the Heisman. It's not what you did in the last 3 weeks or in your bowl game. This is what you did for 16 straight games. And the only guy who was consistent the entire 16 games was Matt Ryan.
Absolutely. Now, listen, one of the things that I told a couple of my buddies that are Raiders fans, I said, listen, you guys do not hang your heads, because we're talking about Houston possibly more than likely winning this game this weekend. But we're only talking about that, and we're only talking about, you know, the Patriots having more or less a cakewalk into the Super Bowl, for lack of better, because Derek Carr is not in the playoffs. That's it. I mean, if this guy's here, I mean, listen, it would have been very hard for me to pick against the Raiders going into the Super Bowl, just because of the way that he's the heartbeat of that team, and that says MVP. I mean, so I can't deny that, you know, he had a case, but at the end of the day, when you talk about throwing to 13 different receivers, and you talk about, you know, putting up, what is it, Atlanta's averaging close to 35-plus points a game. When you talk about those types of numbers, and this thing has always been an offensive award, I mean, there's just no way you can give this to anybody other than Matt. I mean, it will be a travesty for anybody else to get it at this point.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, Coach of the Year, we kind of went back and forth on a little bit here and there. We could make a case for Belichick finally getting credit, or this being an apology from the NFL for Deflategate. You know, I hope Brady didn't get the MVP for that reason. But, you know, Del Rio's done so much. I think Dan Quinn should be considered, because, you know, finally give him credit for him building this team the way it needed to be built. Because, I mean, Gus Bradley had the same basic idea, but didn't really build it the right way. So, you know, he's out in Jacksonville. But,
yeah,
you know, Coach of the
Year. I think Del Rio's the Coach of the Year. And that would be my vote. Because, again, Atlanta's been to the playoffs, you know, several times over the past many years. These guys haven't seen the playoffs since 2002, right? And for this guy to come in basically a year and turn this – because he changed the culture. He didn't. I mean, it's one thing to just go to the playoffs, but these guys believe that they're better than the people that they're playing. And that's a culture change, and that's not easy to do for a bunch of millionaires, right? I think Del Rio is the Coach of the Year, hands down.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to argue that, I think.
Real quick, I like to make a prediction. I'm going to make an impact prediction.
Okay.
Since we're talking about Kyle Shanahan. If Kyle Shanahan, or I should say when Kyle Shanahan accepts a new position – do not be surprised to see Chip Kelly as the new offensive coordinator for the Atlanta Falcons.
To see who?
Offensive coordinator for the Atlanta Falcons. Don't
I
be
mean,
surprised
who did
to see that happen. Chip Kelly.
Oh, now you're on that side after I say it, right?
Oh, no, I didn't hear you. Oh, so you did say that. Okay. Well, then we're in agreement.
Not on the show. I think I texted it to you or something the other day, or I texted somebody.
Yeah,
it
wasn't me, but yeah, if you said Chip Kelly, absolutely. Now that I know that that's the job that he's looking for, I think that's the situation. He has to be in a situation where he can come and be successful right away.
But I hate to burst your bubble, but I said earlier in the show where Chip Kelly's going to go.
Oh, wow. What did you say?
The short answer is he's going to take over for Josh McDaniels, who is going to leave for a head coaching gig somewhere. But if Chip is not going to run the Chip Kelly system in New England, he's going to basically run McDaniels' system, and he's going to keep up the Patriot way. But he is a huge friend of Bill Belichick, and him saying I think it's his way of saying, I'm about to take over for Josh because Josh is leaving.
Well, that would make sense. I can buy that. I think that's the safer route, especially with Tom Brady and, I mean, a perennial winner. Either way, he's got to go to a situation where he's a winner, because right now his resume is horrible.
Which, of course, you know, brings up the who takes Silver's coordinator here. But the other day, it was the it's one like the quarterback's coach that's here now, maybe. Who was it you
yeah,
told me?
I think either the quarterback's coach or either Raheem Morris. Right? I think that those are the safe bets. You gotta keep it in house because you can't introduce another offense to this guy. I mean, he's as successful as he's been, you can't introduce another offense to him.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I like Raheem Morris anyway. I think he was another one like Josh Freeman that got a raw deal in Tampa. I'm glad he was able to get on. And a lot of people say, well, he's a secondary guy. But, I would argue that we know another great secondary coach that just so happens to be on this show a good handful of times. And I trust him to run an offense, so I don't have a problem with Raheem as well.
Right.
Now, we did disclaim a lot of rumors earlier. Obviously, we shot down the rumor that that Coach Hill has taken his name out of the coaching search. He's not going to take any of these six jobs. I didn't know if you knew about that. But also the rumor that you were joining the Peace Corps, we're going to go ahead and shoot that one down as well. Just because you're on a plane a lot doesn't mean you're in the Peace Corps. Not there's anything wrong with the Peace Corps, but I think if you're on a plane, you're not going for that reason.
Exactly. No, I'm definitely not joining the Peace Corps. Now, as far as Coach Hill taking one of the six jobs, I mean, again, there are a lot of jobs out there. Don't be surprised. It wouldn't surprise me if one of these coaches come calling on him because he's a valuable resource. So I'll just say stay tuned to that. But definitely not me joining the Peace Corps.
Right. And definitely he did kind of laugh through it. He did not necessarily discount that I was saying that he was not in the coaching search. So you never know with Coach Hill. He could up and be a secondary coach tomorrow, and we'd learn as soon as you did.
Right.
Let's see. I have a few other theories that I will float past you. I was going to go over some of the general manager names, but besides Elliott Wolf in Green Bay and Chris Ballard in Kansas City, I don't really know who half these people are, and I really doubt either of us really do. But I still think that Sean Payton being traded to the LA Rams is a real possibility. And obviously a lot of people were like, oh, he would go and he would fix Jared Goff. And I said, no, I think he would redshirt Jared Goff and give him a year to really kind of sit back and learn. And I think one of the quarterbacks that are so underrated that's going to be a free agent, I believe, or he's going to be on the market this year. Think about Sean Payton goes to the Rams and he gets Jay Cutler to come over there and work with Jared Goff.
Absolutely not. I wouldn't touch Jay Cutler with a 10-foot pole. Listen, it's much like it with Atlanta. When a lot of people started asking, and I even asked, why get rid of Roddy and go get Mohamed Sanu? It all came down to attitude, right? It's influence on the team. And do you really want Jay Cutler's blueprint on your franchise quarterback for the next 15 years? Absolutely not. Drew Brees
Well, see, it makes sense for Jay Cutler, though, because he gets out of Chicago. He gets to go play somewhere for a couple years where he's going to be the starter. He gets a little more free reign. Sean Payton's going to keep such a leash on him that it's not like he's going to get too out of control. And his family, including his wife, would rather live in Hollywood than Chicago anyway.
Yeah, but the problem with that, Jeremy, is he's got a $20 million a year salary. Do you want $20 million a year headache?
I really feel like he's going to get cut from the Bears anyway, so he's going to get about half of that from them. So he could sign for $2 or $3 million somewhere else and just add it on.
Yeah, I don't know. As a GM, I wouldn't do it. I get your point, but as a GM, I wouldn't do it. That guy's attitude is horrible.
That's fair enough. obviously we heard that Steve Smith is going to retire now. It's all but official. Never discount that Steve Smith could still show up. But I also heard that Robert Mathis is going to hang it up. And, you know, we have his counterpart here in Atlanta for all those years. And Dwight Freeney and all that he's meant to Vic Beasley. I would say Robert Mathis is a Hall of Famer. He's borderline. What do you think?
Absolutely. Absolutely Hall of Famer. I saw where Freeney actually put something out there and gave him like a video chat and says, hey, you know, thank you for your service. Thank you, my boy. You've been my friend, yada, yada, yada. So he gave him a video farewell. Absolutely, he's a Hall of Famer. I mean, if we're talking about Terrell Owens becoming a Hall of Famer, we can say Robert Mathis is a Hall of Famer.
I could really argue that because I'm a big T.O. fan, and he is in the top five in a lot of categories. But
absolutely.
But as far as Steve Smith, you know, he played 16 years. I mean, technically 15 if you count the fact he didn't really play at all last year. He finished with almost 15,000 yards, which is seventh all-time, right behind Tim Brown and just ahead of Marvin Harrison. He's a five-time Pro Bowler, never won a Super Bowl. I actually think he never made a Super Bowl either.
Yeah, he went the one time with Carolina.
Oh, that's right, that's right.
Before, yep, the first time they went. But he's absolutely a Hall of Famer and a heck of a damn football player.
Absolutely.
I'm going to miss just what he brought to the game. I mean, he brought integrity to he brought tenacity to the game. And I mean, he was voted as the one player that no one wanted to fight. So that says a lot.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And even while we're talking, I'm going to reach out to him now, and maybe we can get him on the show in this next few months.
Right, right.
So let's see. I'll ask you a good question, which will give me time to fill that out, I guess, since our producer is too busy watching the hockey game on in the background. But at least it's not Monster Jam tonight in the studio. You know, this is part of why we now have off-air producers, because sometimes our on-air producers just get a little too into the Monster Jam, I believe.
Right, right.
But, you know, we had Cody on. You've been on and talked to Cody a bunch of times. But, you know, what does Wes Durham and his calls for Falcon games mean to you?
Well, you know how I am. I mean, to have guys on that's actually first of all, I'm a bit of a homer when it comes to guys that are our commentators. I actually like commentators that actually like the team. I mean, I'm okay with being subjective, but when you have guys that really, really, truly root for the teams that they're commentating for, I mean, Wes gives a perfect blend of the fan perspective as well as the subjective perspective. I mean, he's not afraid to say the things that need to be said, but it's never in a malicious mentality, right? And he keeps it professional, and he uplifts the team at the same time while making suggestions. And I mean, and he's got the coolest radio voice. So that's one of the things that I've always liked, is that he's got the coolest radio voice. He's got a distinguished voice that when you hear it, you know it's Wes. So I hate that I didn't get a chance to talk to him. I'm sure it'll come up in the future. But, I mean, again, to be subjective, but then to also uplift the teams that he's talking about, I think that's probably his best quality.
Absolutely. And then we're in the last 5 minutes or so of Falcon Zone here on Blog Talk Radio. Thanks to Impact Media, and we'll go through the outro here in a minute. But, you know, we're really lucky here in the Atlanta area, especially broadcasting-wise. I mean, I could go any route with this, music, movies, sports, anything. But, I mean, me personally, and this may make a lot of people feel old, which is not my intention, but, you know, I grew up with the Wes Durham's calling games, ACC games, and Georgia Tech games, and obviously Falcons games. And I grew up with all the Atlanta Braves guys during that 90s run in the late 80s. And, you know, we grew up with all these great announcers, Dave Cohen now, as I mentioned, at Georgia State, all these just fantastic announcers that we're lucky enough to get to listen to. It's like having, you know, five Vince Scullys, one for each sport in the Atlanta area.
Right, right, right. I mean, again, that's why I said it when I joined, even though he had already kind of dropped off. I mean, this was a phenomenal. I mean, how much do you feel to actually have been able to be on with a legend like Wes Durham? I mean, the guy is you know, there's only a few announcers that we can talk about in the Atlanta area that say and that speak for Atlanta, and that you think about Atlanta when you think about, you know, an announcer. I mean, the guy's phenomenal. He's a class act.
I can't lie. The inner broadcast geek in me, the same one that flipped out I didn't really flip out, but the same one that had a crazy almost schoolgirl reaction to seeing Rich Eisen 10 feet in front of me in person. It was really hard to do the interview because it was fantastic just having him on. I mean, that's kind of why I'm trying to figure out what to say now. It just
absolutely.
I mean,
just take it in.
He's one of those legendary guys that, you know, that's how we do these kind of interviews when we have the people. Yeah, go ahead.
I was gonna say he's an icon, man. Just soak it in. Just take it in. I'm actually with you. I'm glad I was able to live vicariously through you, and actually being able to really truly have a conversation with the guy and interact with him. In this setting, because I know how hard you work at this. I don't think a lot of people know how hard you work at what you do. And so I'm actually happy for you because you know, if anybody deserves it, you do, man.
Hey, I definitely appreciate it. And as we're in the last 2.5 minutes or so, as the producer has paused the game long enough to tell me, appreciate it. Well, it'll save him having to run around the building again. But, yeah, it's for anybody that did miss, the time when Coach was on earlier, if they want to hear the entire time you were on, Reggie, if you want to hear when Cody Elias from 95.7 The Game Bay Area was on earlier, or if you want to hear when Wes Durham was on just a handful of minutes ago, you can obviously go check out our links, our Blog Talk Radio. We can, you can just go check out any of the social media links at Team Impact Media, at the Impact 99. They're all going to be on there. I think we just lost Reggie, which is fine. We're in the last 2 minutes. Thanks, Reggie, for being on. I want to thank the King ATL and Reggie Walker. I want to thank the coach, Haywood Hill. I want to thank our new off-air producer, who is so much better than the on-air one currently. And, yes, I will say that in front of him, Billy Lindahl, for all the things he's done. I want to thank Wes Durham, and obviously I want to thank Cody Elias for being a part of tonight's show. I'm Jeremy the Impact York. We will see you guys next week. Go Falcons.
Oh, it started? Well, then let me start. Hey, I'm just here so I don't get fined.
Playoffs? What are you talking about? Playoffs? You kidding me? Playoffs?
I know it's been, 15 years since the Bills made the playoffs. Well, get ready, man. We're going.
We'll start. Everyone but the center. Offense. 5-yard penalty.
I said, are you scoring? They said, I'm scoring. You scoring? So I said, we scoring.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Falcons on top. Falcons. clear without the bam. Yeah, okay. Bam! What?